Imagine a world where the most educated, articulate people consistently lead society toward disaster, yet face no consequences for their failed ideas. This isn't dystopian fiction. It's the reality Thomas Sowell meticulously documents in his landmark work. The central paradox is both simple and profound. Those who deal primarily in ideas rather than their application operate in a unique environment of unaccountability. Unlike engineers whose bridges must stand or surgeons whose patients must survive, intellectuals face no real-world test of their theories. When their ideas fail catastrophically, they often emerge unscathed or even enhanced in stature. Consider Paul Ehrlich, whose apocalyptic 1968 prediction that hundreds of millions would starve in the 1970s proved spectacularly wrong, yet didn't prevent him from receiving continued acclaim and prestigious academic honors. This immunity creates a dangerous dynamic where being scandalously asinine carries no professional penalty, allowing destructive ideas to persist and spread through what Sowell calls the intellectuality. Journalists, teachers, activists, and others who disseminate these notions throughout society. Why do brilliant minds so often get it wrong? The answer lies in how intellectuals fundamentally misunderstand knowledge itself. They arbitrarily limit what counts as knowledge, dismissing practical expertise in favor of academic credentials. This perspective is perfectly captured in the Oxford parody, "What I don't know isn't knowledge." But even the most knowledgeable person likely possesses less than 1% of society's total knowledge, a humbling reality intellectuals rarely acknowledge. Consider the Titanic's crew, who had extensive seafaring expertise but lacked the mundane knowledge of iceberg locations that ultimately mattered most. Or think about Starbucks' success, which depends less on coffee expertise than on hyper-local knowledge about specific neighborhood characteristics. This is why free markets, judicial restraint, and traditions growing from collective experience succeed. They tap into dispersed knowledge through continuous feedback. As Robert Bartley noted, the market is smarter than the smartest of its individual participants. When intellectuals demand that specialized knowledge justify itself to those without relevant experience, they're essentially demanding that ignorance be convinced. How can a brain surgeon justify procedures to someone knowing nothing about brains or surgery? When discussing economic inequality, intellectuals perform a remarkable trick. They confuse statistical categories with flesh-and-blood human beings. While statistical quintiles show widening gaps between top and bottom income brackets over time, Treasury Department data following actual individuals reveals something completely different. Taxpayers in the bottom 20% in 1996 saw their incomes rise 91% by 2005, while those in the top 20% experienced only 10% increases. This paradox is explained by human mobility between categories. As people's incomes nearly double, they naturally move out of the bottom quintile. Similarly, when top earners see income cuts of 25 to 50%, many drop from their elite brackets. Among the top 400 income earners from 1992 to 2000, fewer than 25% remained in that category more than 1 year, demonstrating extraordinary turnover rather than an enduring elite class. Most Americans begin at entry-level pay and rise through brackets with experience. A University of Michigan study found over 75% of workers in the bottom quintile in 1975 had reached the top 40% by 1991. Yet intellectuals consistently ignore this mobility, preferring to speak of abstract income categories as if they represented permanent castes. Lenin initially claimed business involved extraordinarily simple operations any literate person could perform. Yet when tested in the Soviet economy, these theories failed catastrophically. 3 years later, facing national crisis, Lenin reversed his stance, admitting widespread ignorance about corporate management. This pattern repeats throughout history. During the Great Depression, both Hoover and Roosevelt implemented extensive federal interventions, which evidence suggests actually prolonged the economic crisis. Conversely, when the 1987 stock market crash hit, worse than any single day in 1929, the Reagan administration's non-intervention led to 20 years of sustained growth, low unemployment, and inflation, demonstrating how intellectual theories often fail real-world tests. Intellectuals operate from two competing worldviews. The dominant vision sees society's problems as requiring intellectual solutions from an anointed elite who can guide others through superior knowledge. The tragic vision, conversely, views inherent human limitations as the core challenge, with social institutions serving as imperfect coping mechanisms. Their focus on equality of outcomes stems from abstract thinking, assuming identical results would emerge from equal treatment. Reality demonstrates otherwise. In 1908, Sao Paulo, specific immigrant groups dominated various industries. Germans exclusively produced metal goods, paper, leather products, and more, while Japanese immigrants grew most of the region's potatoes and tomatoes. Geographic factors significantly shaped such disparities. Different races evolved in distinct environments with varying resources and constraints. The Western Hemisphere lacked crucial draft animals, while sub-Saharan Africa faced multiple challenges: poor soil, irregular rainfall, limited waterways, few natural harbors, and isolation due to the Sahara Desert. Rather than engaging in structured arguments using empirical evidence, many intellectuals rely on verbal virtuosity to evade both logic and facts. Dismissing opposing arguments as simplistic serves as an effective debating tactic that preempts the intellectual high ground without offering anything substantive. This one-word dismissal insinuates that a more complex explanation must be superior, though simplicity says nothing about empirical validity. Before an explanation can be too simple, it must first be wrong. But often the charge of simplicity becomes a substitute for demonstrating error. Intellectuals often assert rights without any constitutional, legislative, contractual, or treaty basis. They claim rights to a living wage, decent housing, affordable health care, and other benefits without establishing why these create obligations on others who never agreed to provide them. The concept of social justice lacks clear definition despite its pervasive use. What many call social justice might better be termed cosmic justice, attempting to correct inherent unfairness in life circumstances beyond society's control. While societies can mitigate life's unfairness, there are limits to what can be achieved. As a noted historian said, we do not live in the past, but the past in us. History shows the perils of intellectual isolation. China lost its technological edge after closing itself off in the 15th century, while Japan found itself technologically behind after two centuries of self-imposed isolation. To understand intellectuals' true role, we must examine their actions rather than their words. Despite claims of concern for social justice, poverty, and environmental issues, many intellectuals focus more on promoting their ideas than evaluating their actual impact. After repeated unintended consequences, those genuinely interested in helping others would study the real outcomes of their proposals. Instead, many invest heavily in advocacy while neglecting to examine results, suggesting their primary goal is moral positioning rather than practical improvement. The true value of ideas lies in their results, not in their theoretical elegance or their proponents' credentials. Only by judging intellectual contributions on outcomes rather than intentions can we break free from the cycle of elegant theories yielding disastrous results.